Welcome, everybody, to Inspiration in 10, where we share inspirational stories, articles, and Torah thoughts in memory of and le'ilui nishmat my father, Harav Gershom ben Harav ben Tzion. After 8 months of living with an unusual amount of uncertainty, living behind the mask, many parents and grandparents not being able to see their grandchildren, their children even, shuls and schools being virtually closed. Even those that do operate, it's a very different scale than it usually is. Smachot and gatherings being cut to a minimum. It has impacted many of our incomes. People are feeling really anxious and claustrophobic about heading into the rainy season and the winter in a semi-lockdown. Some are even feeling paralyzed. They're putting everything on hold until they say, well, we'll wait till it's over. So as we're living with the story of Noach this week, it got me thinking about his quarantine. Imagine being holed up with your family. Now you can go down to the second floor and you'll find the unbearable stench of chickens, ducks, cows, horses, donkeys. You probably, your feet get into some dung, some elephants. Imagine the stench, like being in a pig pen, a chicken coop, a horse's stable, and the skunks all together. And if you wanted something else, you wanted maybe to try a different view, you can go down to the lowest level, and you'll have the stench of the garbage created by all those animals and the people on the top floor. I'm sure they didn't need directions. If you wanted to know where the garbage was, you just had to follow your nose. Now, Noach didn't have a choice. He had to be there. He had to spend most of his day being busy with the animals and that awful stench. So did you ever wonder why didn't Noach build maybe a terrace to go out? Maybe anchor near the shore, get out, take a smoke, a coffee break, a walk, and then go back into the teva? Why didn't he do that? Because he knew that although the stench might be bad, outside, there was a flood raging. He was in the best place possible to stay protected from the raging floods. Not only did he not try to escape the ark, he actually embraced it as his haven. Skunks, lions, crocodiles, garbage, and all. It was a tailor-made shelter for him. As I try to keep my head above water, I look at Noah's story and see if there are any lessons that I can glean so that I'm not just treading water, but riding the wave. So let's look and let's talk about Noah. In a generation that was fraught with corruption and immorality, Noah lived on the straight and narrow. He was considered a tzaddik in his time. He definitely rode against the tide. But how was he treated? To an outsider looking at this story, God gave Noach a tough life. Firstly, he was the laughingstock of numerous generations. People heard about Noach warning about a great flood and building a huge ark for 120 years. They thought he lost his marbles. Noach warned of a flood, and faithfully he's clapping and he's hawking every day, and the people made a laughing stock out of him. So where's that flood, Noach? You still believe that God's going to punish the world and this ark's going to save you? Children who had seen him building the ark when they were younger grew up. They brought their children and their grandchildren to see this kook, Noach, who's still building the ark. Maybe he lost his meds. Maybe he has PTSD. Not only that, but whilst most people in his generation had children by age 100, Noach did not have children until he was 500 years old. Now, this is not some sort of a commentary, some medrash that I'm telling you. It's mentioned directly in the Torah. Imagine what could he have said to himself? God, this is the reward I get for good behavior? Now let's skip ahead and look at things through hindsight, which parenthetically they say is 2020. Now considering that many are struggling with 2020, we might be skeptical about this hindsight. But in all seriousness, Why did God reward the tzaddik Noach with having to struggle with childlessness for a half a millennia, more than three quarters of his life, while the corrupt masses built up their families with children and grandchildren and even great-grandchildren? The Torah tells us that in those days, true judgment for evil behavior began at age 100. We know that all evil people were wiped out at the time of the flood. Had Noah started his family at the average age of 100, by the time the flood came, he would have had a huge family. If they would have all been righteous, Noah would have had to build numerous arks, which would have been a mammoth task, without power tools, without prefab stuff, etc. The likely scenario, though, is that in 500 years, some or many of his descendants would have fallen into the immoral behavior patterns of that generation. And Noah would have suffered immensely when he would be saved in the ark while his family was decimated. As I was prepping for this class, I got a text and it says, "Sometimes we just have to let go and trust that Hashem's plan for our lives is infinitely greater than anything we can imagine." I would just change the first word of that sentence to always, not sometimes. Noah's story and our story reminds me of a very powerful true story that I heard from Charlie Harari, who read it from the grandchildren of the man to whom it happened. Regretfully, due to time constraints, I'll have to abbreviate the story and go over our 10 minutes. The story starts in the 1930s, when many people in Poland were dealing with extreme poverty. There's a man who we'll call Heschel. He was really struggling to put bread on the table. Some of the guys who knew him, they gave him some advice and they said, "You know what? Things are really hard for you. Why don't you go to America? There are people who are doing it. They're going to America. The land, you know, the streets are paved with gold. And then you'll make some money. You'll come back. Maybe you'll have some money to start a business." Of course, he really thought about this deep and hard, because who wants to leave your whole family? Leave them for at least a year. It's not like you had FaceTime or you could just WhatsApp them and speak to them instantly. But after thinking long and hard, he and his wife thought, "You know what? We're going to do this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to leave the wife here with the kids, and I'm going to go to America, to the land of unknown, and try to make some money." Before he left, Heschel went over to his Rebbe to get his Rebbe's blessing. And the Rebbe said to him, "You're going to do this? Okay, I'm going to say to you one thing. Please remember, no matter what happens, no matter what you keep of the mitzvot, there is one thing that I want to make sure you do." And he said, "Rebbe, of course I'm going to keep all the mitzvot. I'm a Torah Jew." He says, "Listen, remember this one thing. No matter what happens to you on your trip, through your adventures, through your journey, always remember that whatever God does is for the good. And always say it. Everything God does is for the good. L'tav avid. Or gamzu l'tova. There are different ways that we say it." And so Heschel takes off. Imagine the scene at the dock when he's leaving. The kids crying, the wife, the tears, the heartbreak. But he goes. He gets onto the ship and he heads to America. On the ship, he sees, hey, there's a lot of other young religious men there. And they get together, they form a minyan. And they also decide that when they get to America, they're going to stick together. No matter what happens, they'll check up on each other. They'll go to the same shul. And they decided on the boat that in a year's time, they will all get together and go back on the ship to Europe no matter what. So they came to America. Some got jobs faster than others. But after a little while, basically everyone got a job except for Heschel. He tried this, he tried that, didn't work out. Each time he said, "God, whatever you do is for the best." He remembered his Rebbe's words. "Whatever you do is for the best." And he tried and he tried. And he's thinking, I left my family there. And then finally, one day he gets a job. He's schlepping boxes. He's moving boxes. And he gets paid first a little, then gets paid a little more. But he's a very good worker, a strong worker. And he gets paid. And as he's working, he makes a very good friend, a friendship with this one man. The other man's not Jewish, but they form a good friendship. The other man sees that Heschel's a good man, a good worker. And he says, you know what? Why do we have to both work for this boss? Let's form a partnership together. Let's start our own business. I'm an American. I have the know-how and you have the brawn. You're a strong man. You'll do things. You'll work and we'll make this business happen. Let's go into this furniture business that I have. I already have some contacts. And somehow Heschel decides, yes, you know what? I'm going to do it if it's going to help me get back to my family faster. And so he joins this man and they start a business. The man convinces him that whatever money he has saved already to invest it in the business. Heschel says, look, you know, I'm leaving after a year. Maybe I'll come back eventually, but I'm leaving after a year. The man says, no problem. Whatever you invest, plus the interest, plus whatever this business makes, you'll take out all the profits that belong to you. And so that is what Heschel did. And they worked and they built this business and they got more customers. It was a furniture business. It was doing well. It was doing nicely. And then it was getting closer to the year being over. And he told his friend, his partner, he says, look, I'm going to have to take the money out of the business soon. And I am going to be heading back to Europe. And then hopefully I'll come back. Man says, no problem. That was our deal. That's what's going to happen. But a few days before he was about to embark on the boat, a few days before he was about to take his money out of the bank and out of the business, he gets some terrible news. His father in Europe passed away. Of course, Heschel is devastated. After all this, I was just heading home. But he remembers the rabbi's words ring in his ears and he says, Litav Avid, Koma, Avid HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever Hashem did, it's for the best. And he goes and he sits Shiva. The rabbi says, you got to sit Shiva before you get on the boat. And so he sits Shiva, he's devastated, he's heartbroken, he misses his father, feels bad that he missed those final days, at least with his father, and he sits Shiva. And his friends come and they remind him, listen, you know, as soon as you get up from Shiva, we're getting onto that boat. He says, sure. During the second day of Shiva, his business partner comes in. He says, listen here, we had an absolutely tremendous, tremendous offer from the bank. We've built up enough trust. They want to give us a mortgage, but we have to sign on it right away. He says, but I'm sitting in Shiva. This is not something I deal with now. He says, no, but we must do it. We're going to lose the best opportunity. I need your signature. They know you. They trust you. He says, well, please, I'm in Shiva. He says, no, just sign these papers. He says, but I can hardly read English. It takes me ages to read and go through all these papers. The partner says, look, you know me. We've been friends for such a long time. Don't you trust me? And he convinced Heschel to sign the papers. Heschel signs the papers. He goes back into his Shiva. He mourns for his father properly. He gets up from the Shiva and he knows he has to work very quickly, get himself ready because tomorrow he's leaving. And so he calls his business partner because he knows that now some things have changed with the paperwork, but he has to get his money so that he can go back to Europe. No answer. That's surprising. I wonder why my partner's not answering. Okay, I guess I'll see him tomorrow. I'll go into the business and then I'll have to go to the bank right after that. And so the next day he comes to his place of work, to his business, to the store, and something looks odd. Usually it's busy on a Monday morning. Everything looks sort of closed. He sees a sign on the shop as he gets closer. Closed. What's going on? And he starts looking into the window and he sees all the furniture, all the merchandise is gone. And all of a sudden it hits Heschel right in the gut. This terror seizes him and he quickly runs to the bank where he had gone every single week to make deposits. The bank really knew him. He goes in and he quickly rushes to the manager. He just passes the line, rushes to the manager and he says, please, I need to see what's going on in my account. And they open up the account. He says, please, I need to take out my half of the money. And the manager looks at him. He says, what are you talking about? He says, I've been depositing money into this account for ages. You know me. He says, yes, I know you. But it looks like a few days ago you signed some papers giving everything over to your business partner. And Heschel's heart broke into a million pieces. This terror and this fear seized him. He was shaking, but as he was shaking, the voice of his rabbi went through his ears. Everything God does is for the good. And he forced himself to say those words. Everything God does is for the good. Realizing that his partner had wiped him out completely. And all that he had done for the last year, working to get money, to go home to his family and to try to take care of them, maybe start an extra business in Europe, all of it was wiped away. He was devastated. And now he had his friends waiting for him at the ship. He came to the ship and told them the story, and they were now in mourning for him. They almost, as we say, we tore Creo, they almost tore their own clothes for all the devastation that Heschel was suffering. And now he said, my friends, there's no reason for me to go back with you. Tell my wife what happened. I'm going to try. There's no point in me coming back with nothing. And so the friends left, and Heschel went back to his apartment. And for 2 days, he was depressed, and he slept, and he had to come to terms with everything that had happened to him. But the words of his rabbi rang in his ears, and he said, everything God does is for the good. After 2 days, he picked himself up, and he starts again. And he calls different contacts of his, and he speaks to friends of his, and they say, listen, we know you. We know you're good. We know you have a lot of talent. We know you can produce great furniture. We know you have great contacts. We trust you, but you have to start. We want to do business with you, but you have to open a business. He says, how am I just going to open a business? They said, well, you have to get a loan from the bank. You have to get a mortgage, get a building. He says, how do I do that? They said, well, you have to be an American. Are you an American? No, I'm not an American. I'm Polish. He says, well, go become American. And that was the beginning of Heschel's journey to become an American citizen. He worked hard. At that time, it wasn't that difficult. He was already in America, went to the post office, filled out some paperwork, had to take some tests, work. And each step, he said, whatever God does is for the good. Heschel eventually started a business of his own. He took out a mortgage. He had a storefront, he had good contacts, and he started a furniture business again. He started all over. But every Shabbat was lonely, every holiday was lonely, every night was lonely, but he kept on pushing and reminding himself that I don't know what on earth God has in store for me, but it's all for the good. And then Heschel finally felt that the business was in shape enough that he could go back home, that he can return home. He had some people he trusted that would take over the business, just run it while he's away. It would still be his business. He took home a sizable amount of money for his family. He had been sending them money all along, and he embarked back to Europe with excitement. But the day that he arrived, with all the anticipation, he met his family at the dock, but they did not look very happy. The day that he arrived was in 1939, and Hitler, Yimach Shemai V'Zichrei, had just entered Warsaw, and people were terrified for their lives. Heschel came home to a family that was in fear, that was broken, that was terrified. And again, he thought, God, I did, and I went through all of this to come back to my family for this. But again, the voice of his rabbi in his ears, everything God does is for the good. But it was hard to see the good at that time. That night, as he laid in bed, all of a sudden it hit him. I am an American citizen. I have a way out of this. The next day, Heschel marched his family to the American embassy, and before you knew it, Heschel and his family were on the next ship back to America, back to a flourishing business which he had created because of all that had befallen him. I'm pretty sure that each of us can think of many times in our lives when it was or it is hard to see the actual or the metaphorical tears. Hopefully by now we can see that as tough as that time was or is, there is some good that emerged or will still emerge from it. There's so much more that we can talk about the Teva, about the Ark. But through the floods of our lives, let's be grateful that God designs an Ark that is tailor-made for us, even if we have to deal with skunks and lots of garbage. We know that our Ark is the best place for us, and hopefully we will even see the rainbow through the flood. Thank you, everybody, for joining me tonight in Elevating the Airwaves, Le'iloi Nishmat, my father, Harav Gershom and Harav Ben-Sion. Please remember, a little light dispels a lot of darkness, and Shabbat in South Surrey begins at 5:47.